This weekend's message is just one component of our consume journey, which is a little different from a regular Crossroads weekend series. During a journey, people in our community do some individual reflection through the week and meet with a small group to extend that learning. We dive a little deeper into the topic, meet new people, and have a lot of fun along the way. So if you're listening at home or in a car, consider downloading the Consume Journey Guide to work along with us during the week. It's available as a free PDF download at crossroads.net/consumed. And we challenge you to get into a small group for at least the duration of the Consume Journey to share your experiences and discuss the things you're learning. You can find a group and access other small group resources at crossroads.net.
Wow. You know, we just started our all church journey this last week where we're focusing on the topic of what's consuming us. Is money consuming us? Is stuff consuming us? Or is God consuming us? And are we consuming God, or are we just wanting to consume stuff? How was your small groups this last week? Pretty good? Yes, good. People in small groups getting take home work. All is good. All is good. And I thought that we might be able to benefit from a number of different stories today. We're going to see on video about how people are in this process of understanding how to consume God instead of being consumed by other stuff. And I thought we'd also be helped to hear the journey of a good friend of ours, good friend of mine, and you know very well, Brian Wells. So why don't we bring Brian Wells up right now. Brian, come on up. Brian's been undergoing some transitions in his life, and so talk to us, tell us.
Yeah, I guess this phase of the journey, I guess for me, started about maybe 3.5 years ago. Most of you are aware that we're fairly involved in trying to combat human trafficking and child sexual exploitation, not only here in the United States, but also around the world. And the resources that Crossroads has unleashed for that in the last 3 years or so have been incredible, and I really think we're having an impact around the world, and we've got some great partners. About a year and a half ago, though, I started to hear a consistent theme from some of the people we're partnering with on this, and it was kind of surprising. We would be with folks, whether it was in Washington, D.C., or it was in South Asia, or you know, somewhere else around the world, and from the people that are on the very front lines of these issues would tell us something like this. They'd say, you know what, we feel like we're making a dent here, but nothing's going to significantly change until your American entertainment industry stops sexualizing our little girls. And we would hear that again and again of people, you know, even in other countries saying, man, you got to help us on that. We talk about, you know, that maybe America's lost its leadership presence in the world. It hasn't. It's just an issue of what we're leading in right now and what we're pumping out. So in the last year and a half or so in this, I've become increasingly concerned about the culture of murder and sex that's being created in the name of entertainment for our kids. And it was a bit of a surprise for me on this because our focus has been so much on this issue of the supply side of the equation. How do we stop kids from being trafficked? How do we stop this, you know, from happening? But to think about it from the demand side of the equation was kind of something new for us. So as part of this process, I started to really feel maybe that's a unique place I can help make a difference in this with some of my friends. So it was back now, you know, right before summer, I sat down with the board at Crossroads and with Darren Yates here, our executive pastor, and just shared some of the stuff that was stirring in me and asked them to be praying about it over the summer. And I would, too, as well, of I wonder if there's a way that it might be able to make a difference in this. So, came back from the summer and was really feeling like this was something that God was directing me to. And so, Brian and Darren and the board have been incredibly generous and said, why don't you take a few months, 3 or 4 months here, and really take an unannounced sabbatical and try to sort out, could you really make a difference in this? Unannounced just because they tell everybody I'm going on sabbatical, well, what does that mean? And, you know, we didn't know what it meant at the time either. So, have spent the last 3 or 4 months doing that and have really come to a conclusion that I really do feel I can make a difference there. So I'm still going to be on the board here at Crossroads. I'm still going to be an active part as a volunteer of our justice ministry. But I'm going to be leaving staff here at Crossroads, and I'm going to be joining a small group of individuals that are committed to creating great entertainment, especially for families.
Now, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that is awesome. It's phenomenal. Now, I want to ask you a couple of questions about this. First is, you left P&G and came here to Crossroads, which was very, very unstable. In many ways, Crossroads is still extremely unstable. But you left a very lucrative career to come on staff at a startup church, and people thought that was crazy. Now, we're way more stable than we've ever been, and you're going into something now. It's unstable again. It's a new startup. How do you do that? That's a bunch of transitions that would just are not the kind of transitions that many of us would understand or would make ourselves or even could make financially. So talk about that.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, you know, I'm not like profile of a guy who's like a high risk taker and stuff, you know, from that standpoint. But, you know, when it comes to money, though, I think a lot of the times the reason why we don't follow the prompting God's put in our heart often has to do with money and its various words, security, safety, whatever that it is. And certainly Nancy and I have had to wrestle with that, you know, in our marriage and what that means. But there came to a point, you know, years and years ago when I was at P&G that we really decided, you know what, we really feel God wanting us to kind of set a level that we're going to live at and then just use the rest of it for God's kingdom in whatever way he's moving us to. And it ended up being a blessing we weren't expecting because when it came time to leave P&G, it wasn't a change in our living standard at all. It was just a question of where we were allocating resources. It ended up being a great blessing. And then now, you know, it's kind of the same here. After 11 years of Crossroads making this move, it's just a question of, okay, how does God want us to be allocating, you know, our resources now? So in the end, when we make a decision about what I'm going to do for a living, money doesn't have to be number one on the list of what we're considering. It can be what does God want us to do, and then we can make it happen. We found freedom in the choices.
Because you're consumed with God, and that brings freedom.
Yeah, and so we found freedom in our choices, and it's been able to just follow that.
Okay, now one more question. For some folks here, they're going, oh, what does this mean? I mean, Brian Wells does a lot around here. What's this mean for the future of Crossroads and logistics, yada, yada? Talk about that.
Yeah, well, I would say there's two things on that. One is that I think the greatest misperception of Crossroads is that Crossroads is Brian and I. You know, that we are the tip, the tiny little tip of this massive iceberg of this revolution that God's working around here, driven by volunteers, driven by you guys, and then organized by a lot of great staff, but we're even just a little tip of that staff. So, in that, one of the reasons why one of the examples of that is the fact that we really made this decision to give me some freedom to step away from the day-to-day workings of Crossroads 4 or 5 months ago so I could explore this. And it's been completely invisible to, you know, everyone out there because of the leadership engine that's driving this place that I'm only kind of a small piece in. So that transition, if anyone was concerned about that transition, that happened 5 months ago. Hmm. How's it going for you?
Hey, let me pray for you right now.
Sure.
Okay, God, I'm thankful for Brian. I'm thankful for his role in my life. I'm thankful for his role at Crossroads. I'm thankful for his role in the kingdom. I'm thankful for the example that he's setting for us right now of being bold and wanting to be a blessing, whether it's in a place where he's on staff or a place where he's in a business startup. Thank you for him, God, and what he continues to mean to our community. And I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
So just in recap, you're still going to be my next door neighbor. Your dog's still pooping on my lawn.
Yeah.
You're still coming to Crossroads.
As recently as this morning.
You're still on the board of directors, and you could even be on stage again. In fact, we're working on another time to make that happen.
Yeah, I'll be popping up here every once in a while, I'm sure.
Hey, let's thank Brian for who he is, huh? Yeah. Now stay standing if you will, because we're gonna be standing just a minute. But let me give you some other information about this. First of all, some of your head's spinning. You're going, wow, what just happened? I don't understand what happened. I need time to process, and there's a bunch of stuff I'd like to ask. What's that all about? Well, I understand that I might not be the most empathetic understanding where you are, because when Brian looked at me at June 15th and asked me for me to pray about it over my summer study break, it was very clear when I took a look at him on June 15th that he was being called elsewhere. And so for me, this has been an 8-9 month long process. So I'd forget what some of you who might be close to Brian might be thinking right now. But if you want to get to speed with a little more detail, he shared with our whole staff this last Wednesday more details, and we had some Q&A with he and I. We videotaped that whole thing, and you can see that on crossroads.net. So if you want to go to crossroads.net and see a deeper dive, if you're a registered user, you can look at that. If you are not, you can be a registered user very easily, but that's on crossroads.net. Okay, we're going to do a song right now that Andrea and Holly have written. And this has phrases that Jesus used that we're going to be talking about in detail. And so if you know these phrases and you want to sing these phrases, awesome. If you don't know these phrases, not even sure you like these phrases or don't even know what they mean, that's cool too. You can sing if you want to or just sit and soak this in. But God, that's what we're asking today, is that these phrases would start to make sense for us as we all go one step closer on the journey of wondering what it's like to be consumed by you. So help us process you and everything that happens today. Amen.
I was a single mom living in Cincinnati, moved down here. Money was pretty tight because I was going to school, my daughter was going to school. Well, after I graduated, I got a job, and I was able to have the disposable income. So I felt like I had won the lottery, and I had all this extra money to spend. So one of the first things that I did was I bought a car. And I was so proud when I signed my name to that contract, and it was mine. Well, even before I got the car out of the dealership lot, I had to bring it back because the air conditioning wasn't working in the car. So I thought, okay, I have to bring it back. Well, in the meantime, I had parked it in our work parking lot, and I came out of work, and there's a ding on my car. And, you know, that's just, for a new car, a ding is like, oh, no. Then when I finally got the car paid off, I was so happy. I did my last payment. And probably in less than a week after that, I got rear-ended and the car was totaled. So I put so much into that possession of that because, in part was because I had nothing, I had no money, and now I had this money, and I just felt so proud of myself that it put this false pride in me. Looking back at things where I can see God speaking to me about money, it's that, you know, he was saying, Patsy, you were worshiping this car. This car was your idol. You were so much into that and not into me that kind of gave me signs of where my worship and my love should be.
You know, we talked last week about God giving the Israelites and his people really nice stuff. He gave them, let them have gold and silver. There's nothing wrong with having really nice stuff. But then what they did is they turned that stuff into an object of worship and started worshiping it. And we're not saying in this journey that you can't have nice stuff. We're saying that nice stuff can't have you. And it's a very difficult thing to accumulate more and more and more and more, and at the same time, not be consumed by all of those things. Jesus talked about we can store things up here, or we can also store things up in God's heart where God gets excited about them and actually store them up in heaven. And we'll talk about that in weeks ahead, where it means where we get rewards that happen later on as opposed to just the reward of the buzz of the new thing that we have right now. And so that's what we're going to look at today. And before we go any further, let's pray, all right? God, thank you for people like Patsy that share a bit of their story. And thank you for every person here that we came here today to be stimulated and to hear something we may not hear anywhere else and to be challenged. Thank you for that, God. And I pray you'd challenge us right now. I pray these things in your name. Amen. Well, I was reading Time magazine this last week and came across this article talking about the television shows Cashmere Mafia and Lipstick Jungle. We got any Cashmere Mafia, Lipstick Jungle fans in here? Yeah, a few. These are the stars on these television shows. And the gist of the article was that the lifestyle that these women lead, you really couldn't lead with the real world pay of what they would make in the real world. What I was really struck by when I took a look at that is to have seven stunning women like that, the unrealistic expectation that as a woman you could ever look like that. Or the seven out of seven women will look like that. Blessed is he who has realistic expectations for he will never be disappointed. Blessed is he who has realistic expectations, will never be disappointed. That's why Mattel, under pressure a number of years ago, reconfigured Barbie, because Barbie was putting unrealistic expectations on little girls. Women just don't have those long, perfect legs, that perfect rear end, with the perfect slim waist and the large bust line and all the other stuff. That's just not a realistic thing to put into our little girls' minds. It's something they're not going to attain to, in all likelihood, this side of plastic surgery. And this is what happens in our country, and actually across the world, not even across the world, even in the first century of the world, when Jesus talked about being concerned about unrealistic expectations of the things that you could have and accumulate, that those things could actually own you and actually create in you a heart of ungratefulness, a heart of entitlement, a heart that is far from God. Let's take a look at what he says in this little message that he gives. It comes from the book of Matthew, chapter 6, verse 19 and following. Here's the first section. He says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven
where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You know, right now, your car is rusting. Right now. The oxidation process has been taking place. It is rusting right now. Right now, your clothes are going out of style right now. If they're not already out of style, they're going out of style right now. This week, if your quarterly statement comes in, if you've got stocks, portfolio, in all likelihood, it has gone down. You know, the things that we have, the things that we consume, however nice they might be, we have to understand there's a very, very short shelf life for those things. And so Jesus is raising the question of understanding the things that we get, they have a very short shelf life. I was over at Sam's Club a while ago. Sam's Club is a fascinating place to go shopping. I mean, it's like stuff over there is fairly cheap. And who says there's no such thing as a free lunch? There is. It's called Sam's. Sam's on Saturday afternoon with the free samples. You go over there, you get a free lunch. There is such thing as a free lunch. But when I go over there, I'm struck by two things. One, how cheap things are if you can buy in bulk. And the second thing is how many things I all of a sudden see that I never thought I needed that now I need. Like a jack for my motorcycle. I was a jack. That's what exactly. I need to be able to jack my motorcycle up. I can save money on maintenance. So I bought this motorcycle jack. It's been sitting outside for the last 2 years unused and it is rusting. To Jesus' point, the stuff that I buy is going to have a short shelf life. What Jesus is saying here is that what you save is what you'll have. What you save is what you'll have, including the condition that it degrades to. Some of us in here think, well, you know, savings would be nice, but I don't really have any savings. If you have a closet, you have savings. If you have a closet, you have something that's stored away that you're not using. You know, the older our houses are, the less closet space that was in them. I've lived in a couple old houses. That's always a big problem. Not enough closet space. The more our country advances, the more closets we need. Why? Because we need to have more savings for our stuff that's going to be eaten by moths in there. More savings for our stuff that's going to go out of style. In fact, we don't only have big savings. We got to make sure we have basements. We got to make sure that we have garages where we stuff stuff. We have cars that can't even fit in our garages because of all the crap we got in there. We need storage spaces over top of the garages. We need little tool sheds. All these savings of things are rotting away that we thought we had to have and we never or rarely use. And that's not even enough. We actually now have to rent some space off property to store all of our stuff. The Self-Storage Association gave these statistics. They're actually an association of people who own self-storage units. There right now in America is 2 billion square feet of storage space underneath cheap metal roofs. 2 billion square feet. That is the equivalent of 3x of Manhattan Island in New York. The entire Manhattan Island, 3 times of it in cheap aluminum siding, storing our stuff. There's enough personal storage space in self-storage places for every man, woman, and child in America to have 6.7 feet. Every man, woman, and child could be in their own 6.7 feet, square feet, and we would never have to touch one another. What they also said is that this is actually a pretty new industry. It's only about, you know, 35, 40 years old or so. In the first 25 years, it took the first 1 billion to be erected. 25 years to get to 1 billion square feet. The second 1 billion came just in the last 8 years. We are accumulating and consuming and saving and it's being eroded and eaten and stolen. In the guide this last week, what we read was this. As our nation's economic output and consumption have risen sharply over recent decades, there's been absolutely no rise in life satisfaction and a significant increase in both depression and distrust. You can get a guide still at the Information Center if you don't have one. Actually, you can still get in a small group too. Just come here Wednesday night. We'll take care of you. But this is interesting that we are getting more and more depressed, more and more upset, while our standard of living continues to increase and increase and increase. Now, I know some of us believe that our standard of living isn't increasing, but it is. It is. The Census Bureau, with their statistics, has this graph for us to observe. 1965, the real median income, that is adjusted for today's inflation, each household was making $36,847. That's median. meet that right in the middle of the road. And today, the real median income is $48,200. Now, certainly there are some things that we are paying more for than before, but there are a heck of a lot of things that we're able to consume because the prices have come way, way down. If you wanted something to record a television program in 1972, you would have had to work at the average wage for 365 hours to have a VCR. Today, you only have to work 2 hours to have the greatest DVD player that's ever been invented. Cell phones. In 1984, if you wanted a cell phone, yeah, of course, you can't live without a cell phone, right? Oh, I have to have a cell phone. I have to have the $150 payment a month. I have to have, you know. Well, in 1984, you would have had to work 456 hours just to buy the phone. Today, you can have a cell phone for 4 hours of average labor. PCs, in 1984, you would have had to work 435 hours. Today, you work 2.5 hours, or 25 hours to get a PC. Now, obviously, the PC, the cell phone, the VCR, the DVDs we have today are infinitely more capacity, more bells and whistles, and better off than what we had before, and working less and less for it. Even if you wanted to buy a mid-sized Ford car, over the last decade, the price on that have dropped 6%. So, our real median income has gone up, our consuming ability has gone up, and our depression medication has gone up. Our level of dissatisfaction has gone up. Our level of gratitude and thankfulness has gone up. I mean, well, what is going on here? I just want us to think that there might be something going on in the spirit realm that makes us think that way, that makes us feel that way. There's something else that's happening that doesn't get talked about a lot. Let's look at what Jesus says as he continues on. He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. And if your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. You can have God and money. You can't serve God and money. You can't be consumed by both God and consumed by stuff. And what you were consumed by, Jesus says, is whatever you focus on. Whatever your heart's content is on. The thing that you see is what you'll be. What you see, Jesus says, is what you'll be. It's an old rabbinic saying back in the first century of people who were generous and were sharing their stuff were said to have a good eye. A good eye. And Jesus says, you are a good eye. You see the right things if your heart is inclined in the right place. And many of us, what we are being is self-storage units because that's what we see. We are being people who feel like we need more because that's what we see. We see opportunities that we don't have. See, the thing that Jesus is saying here is the more stuff that you have, the more dangerous your spiritual condition is. Because the more stuff you have, the more relationships you have. I don't know about you, but I can't have all that many personal friendships. It's just taxing, right? I mean, there's only so many people. Well, everything that you and I own, we have a relationship with. We have to care for it. We have to insure it. We have to maintain it. We've got to make sure it's locked away. We've got to make sure someone doesn't steal it. We've got to make sure its value doesn't go down. And the more stuff we have, just by sheer force of magnetism, the more we're going to be drawn into relationship with it and the more we're going to be consumed by it. What you see is what you'll be. The things that you notice, the things that you're passionate about, that's the thing that you're becoming. Let's take a look at Tom's story of some of the things that he's learning while he's not having the things that he used to have.
I came to Cincinnati at the end of 2006. I accepted a job here. Prior to that, I had been living in Singapore. A lot went into our decision to come home. My wife and I really agreed that while it was a wonderful lifestyle for us over there, because of the travel, I was away probably 80% of the time. There was much that I was missing about spending time with my children. I started the job, but it didn't work out. After only a couple months, I lost that position. But we had already made a decision to build a house here. My children had started school, and really for the first time in my life, I was out of work. And to this day, 14 months later, I still am out of work. Up until this point in my life, I've always been the provider for my family. I've been the one to provide financially, and I've always taken a great deal of pride in being able to do that very well. As my income rose, as my affluence and my wealth rose to levels I really had never thought it would in my life. I became more self-absorbed, more conscious of the acquisition of things. When we lived over in Asia, we had help at home. We didn't provide for ourselves in that way. We didn't cook. We didn't clean. We lived in a huge home. No purchase was thought about. Everything was a possibility. And it got to a point where, you know, we couldn't even think of things that our children needed. You know, at Christmas time, you know, what was it that I really struggled to find things for them? And in turn, when I was asked, what is it that I wanted? I couldn't think of anything. You know, there wasn't anything that I absolutely needed. In there, it got to a point where there wasn't even anything I wanted anymore. The primary reasons for me to leave Singapore and come back home were to spend more time with my family. This last 12 to 14 months have been exactly that. I have spent time with my children. I take them to school in the morning. I do their homework. My wife and I spend time together, although I think she might think it's a little bit too much time. It is only in this year when I have faced significant financial challenges that I've really begun to think about and regret some of what I didn't do in the past when I had opportunities to help. And while I'm not penniless today, I gain so much more out of the idea of giving. And the truth is that giving at a time when you are really struggling is I think, the best opportunity to learn. I think there are things that are kind of screaming for my attention and for my support and for my involvement, but it will require sacrifice. And I'm still working through that. And I think the next temptation will be for me around if a job does come up that gives me overseas opportunities again or a chance to move to New York, which is really where the industry that I've been involved in is really centered. You know, will I have the strength to say no? And I guess really my fear is not in whether he will show up or not, but that when he shows me a path that I should take, that I'll have the courage to take it. Because in truth, I am still resistant to the idea of giving up things. If it comes down to a choice of giving back, downsizing, in order to keep the lifestyle I have, you know, will I be able to do that? I hope I will.
A lot of questions, a lot of stuff that's going inside with all of us that we're trying to figure out why this is a longer journey. What I love about Tom there is, did you notice, even though he doesn't have a job right now, there's a lot of uncertainty, he's got life in his voice, he's got life in his eyes. There's a sense of satisfaction and the peace he has, even though he doesn't have an income right now and has a lot of uncertainty, because what he has right now is God. Jesus talked about this in the book of John, chapter 10, verse 10, when he said this. He said, the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. Jesus says that there is a spiritual force that's trying to drive us into depression. There's a spiritual force that's trying to drive us into woe is me. There's a spiritual force that's trying to drive us into thinking that we're getting the short end of the stick. There's a spiritual force that is stealing from us, that is robbing us, that is hurting us. It's not unusual if you feel that way. There's a force that's trying to make that happen to you. But Jesus says, on the other hand, I come that you have life and have it abundantly. That you have life abundantly. Regardless of what you own or what you don't own, if you have me, if you're consumed by me, you can have life satisfaction and wholeness. Have it abundantly. There is a concerted effort in our society, not just American society, the entire world history society, to make us feel like we don't have enough, to make us feel like we can't be thankful, to make us feel like we just need one more thing. We just need one more thing to happen for us. And it's not accidental that we compare ourselves to the person next to us. It's not accidental that we keep putting ourselves in greater degrees of debt or greater degrees of bondage, trying to purchase something for ourselves. In reality, it's something that only Jesus can give us. Now, with that in mind, I want to take a look at just one of the many ads that we've all seen. Every day, as we saw in the guide, 3,000 messages come to us telling us we don't have enough. We shouldn't be grateful, because that's what all advertising is there, to tell us we don't have enough. We're getting the short end of the stick. Your life won't be full. You won't have abundant life until you buy this. So with that as a backdrop, let's just look at with fresh eyes at something we've probably all seen. Chase what matters. What matters is a bigger television for you. That's what matters. What matters is something beyond what you have right now. And we're going to make it so easy for you, so easy. We've now are trying to serve you by now letting you text message us to find out how much more money we can loan you at 21% interest. You're so in debt up to your ass right now, that guy is. He's so hurt right now. So we're going to make it. And by the way, if you're more upset that I said that versus the message here, get a clue. Okay, get a clue. We're going to serve you so much now. We're going to help you get into more bondage. We're going to help you get into more. In fact, we're going to say what you all think. We're just going to make it part of our advertising. I want it all and I want it now. Don't. We say that in our hearts. I want it all and I want it now. It just articulates the sense of entitlement that this spiritual war is trying to get us to believe. I want it all and I want it now. Now. And I'm going to chase what matters. God doesn't matter. People knowing God doesn't matter. Kids in sex slavery doesn't matter. Being thankful doesn't matter. My family doesn't. What matters is a 52-inch plasma television. That is what matters. Another part on the stuff is they also hawk chase freedom. That's another byline. Chase freedom. Now that you're attuned to this a little bit, you're seeing that this is a force that's trying to steal from you, that's trying to kill your life, trying to rob from you. See what you pick up. Let's watch it again. Oh man, you know, their relationship isn't good. They're in separate rooms. Now, and it's all because the television flickers. That's the whole thing. Get a new television, all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're together, oh, we're calling. That's exactly what our marriage needed. More debt and a new television. Oh, that's just what we needed. He goes in and he sees the television. He's having like a sexual experience. You see him there? He's going, oh, he's like... And they're just serving him so much. You know, I've read a lot about happiness over the last several years, and there's consistent studies that show that once you have food in your stomach, once you're not hungry, once you have clothes, once you have a roof over your head, your happiness is determined by how well you're doing compared to the person next to you. So it doesn't matter how much more food you have or how much better homes you have or how many more clothes you have. Your happiness is determined whether or not your home is better than your friends, whether or not your clothes are better than the person that you know. And this is an insidious thing that we think that if we just aspire to the better neighborhood, we'll be happy. No, you aspire to the better neighborhood, you get there, and then you can't keep up with people who have nicer boats than you. Or nicer cars than you. Or nicer whatever. Really, if you want to really be happy, you know, downsize two neighborhoods down so you can feel good about yourself relative to what other people don't have that you have, you know? But why is this? Why is it crazy? Do you not see that this is a spiritual force that's making us be thankful based on what somebody else does or doesn't have? A couple questions for us to think about. One is this. Are we living in absence or abundance? Jesus says, I've come to give you life abundantly. What we'll tend to think if we just follow the spirit of the world is that, no, I'm absent of what I need. Once you do this for me, then I'll be thankful. I'm not happy because I'm not getting this. I'm not happy because the coffee that I like at Crossroads, I don't have anymore. I'm not okay until I can have enough hot dogs given out for free. Then I'll be happy. I'm not happy until I'm in absence right now. I don't have, but once someone does what I want, then I'm happy. If you aren't happy right where you are right now, you are deluded. If you don't have enough right now, if you don't feel abundance right now, you are deluded. You are being stolen from. You're being killed. Your spiritual life is being taken away from you. Gratitude just says, man, whatever I have right now, man, thank you. I am in abundance. I'm in abundance. Jesus said this in Matthew chapter 6. He just continues on. He continues on this whole thing, and here's his next point he makes. He says, therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns or self-storage units. And yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Jesus says, as a human being, you are more valuable than anything else that breathes or bleeds. You are a unique creation that God has created in His image. And God cares for you. And He cares for you so much that, don't you understand? If birds are being taken care of, He's going to take care of you. We aren't starving to death in here. God meets our needs. Even if we've got to go through a soup line, God is meeting our needs. No one in here is going to die of exposure to the elements. No one in here is going to die of starvation. The fact that we have a body is in and of itself enough to be thankful for. Our hearts have beat 65 times this last minute, and we did nothing to make that happen. And if we did do something to make it happen, it's because God gave some physician the creativity to put a pacemaker in there. You haven't thought about that at all. You've had stuff that's been flowing in your neurons and your synapses have been firing and you've been raising your thing to drink coffee and all. You've never thought about that at all, but God has given you a body that's able to move and function. You've inhaled and exhaled. There's this beautiful gift of the body that God has given you. Jesus says that in and of itself is a blessing. It's a cause for gratefulness and thankfulness. I'm sickened but for myself how oftentimes my happiness is dependent upon where I am on the relative scale around me. I'm sickened by myself. Even, this sounds really bad. In a strange way, I get more grateful when I know somebody who's in pain. Not because I'm grateful that they're in pain, but it serves as a reminder of how grateful I am. And I don't like that I need to think of how grateful I am or how blessed I am by somebody else's difficulty. That shouldn't be. I had a guy call me this last week. He's a pastor down in Georgia. And he has a 9-year-old son that was in a golf cart with his parents. And the cart flipped and fell on his son and broke his trachea. And they had to come up here. And they come to the children's hospital up here. And when he comes, you know, just touch and go on his son's future and everything. He's been coming to Crossroads whenever they come up here. And he just kind of sits in the back of one of the seats in the darkness and just kind of soaks in things. And he just wanted to call me up and say, hey, I just want you to know what you all are doing has really been a huge blessing to my family. I had some questions to ask. And as I heard him talk, I just found myself getting much more grateful for the health of my family. And I also found myself regretting that I have to hear about somebody's pain in order to cause attitudes of thankfulness. I want to be abundantly thankful all the time. I went to the bodies exhibit down at the Cincinnati Museum Center, which I know is quite controversial. Doug McDonald, the CEO of the Museum Center, actually is leading a consume group here at Crossroads. He's been coming to Crossroads for a while. He invited me to come down, and I went and took a look at that whole thing. It's amazing, amazing. I went and I took a look at this one body, and they have skin stripped off of these bodies. And when you go in and look, a few things struck my mind. First of all, I thought it was going to be redundant because you'd see one body and then off in the distance you'd see another one. You think, well, isn't one body the same? Isn't it all the same? It wasn't, because each body would have a different layer of muscle, say, peeled away. You'd see different organs. And the intricacy of the human body was stunning to me. I was reminded of the way it's like whenever I've gone to an art gallery, a really fine art gallery, a fine museum. There's a hushed reverence when you go through great rooms where there's great pieces of art. It's just instinctual because we realize some great creator has put this on the canvas or has made this thing, and just out of reverence for that person, I need to just be respectful. This was like going through the bodies exhibit. Doug said that it's the one exhibit they don't have to put glass cases around because we instinctively know just not to touch. And I know I was going through that with atheists, agnostics, people all over the spiritual spectrum, and instinctively everybody was worshiping. Because when you see a great work of art, you know there was a great artist. When you see the incredible creation of what our bodies are like, you can't get away that there's some creator, however he did it, had to create this. And I just had new thankfulness and new worship for the body. In fact, so much so, I'm thinking about going down again and putting my iPod in and having worship music just to go throughout the whole thing. It just caused me to be thankful. Blessed is he who has realistic expectations, for he will never be disappointed. When I first said that, I said, blessed is he who has no expectations. And someone said, oh, no, don't say no expectations. We have to have some. We're driven. And I said, okay, well, blessed is he who has healthy expectations. And someone came up to me and said, oh, no, well, healthy could mean that we're doing that. The fact that we've got to define what an expectation is my point. It's crazy. Your expectations, though, are going to define whether or not you feel blessed, whether or not you feel thankful. And the question is, am I given attitude or am I giving gratitude? Do I have an attitude of entitlement about what I need to have or what I don't have and this is wrong? Or am I living in gratitude? Just saying, God, thank you for my body. Thank you for what I do have. Thank you for, I just live with an abundant sense that you are blessing me and I want you to continue to consume me. And if there's anything more physically or materially you want to bless me with, wonderful. But my level of gratitude is not based on that. I'm not going to give you attitude because of what I don't have. I want to be thankful. My parents, when they got the first television, it was a 19-inch television. And man, I was thankful because I had friends that had a black and white television. I was like, whoo-hoo. Today, if you give me a 19-inch color television, I'm going to feel like God's ripping me off. Like, what is that all about? You know, it's almost like I feel like if I don't have like a better television, then somehow something's wrong. Something's wrong with the world and wrong with me. You know what? If I ever did get a 52-inch television, you know what would happen? I put it in my house and me, I go, that's what I need right there. That's all I need is that size right there to make me happy. You know what? That's attitude. That's attitude of entitlement. That's attitude of being under the deluding influence of a spiritual force that's trying to take me away from God. We're going to take a look at another person's story here. And before we do, you know, we're going to have folks take up an offering if you want to be generous today. That's awesome. If you don't, that's cool, especially if you're newer here today. No worries. Just glad you're here. But they're going to come down, and if you want to give, that's awesome. While we do that, we're going to take a look at where somebody else is on the journey.
I think over the last 5 or 6 years, my husband and I have kind of gone through our own journey with money and materialism. I think specifically more so in the last few years, I've been able to do some travel with Crossroads, going to Mama Lodi and some other countries and being exposed to just other cultures and what people have. And I think one of the biggest things I walk away with when I leave is what we can actually live with and what can be satisfying to us. And in that, I think that God has found a way to kind of bring me through this journey that I'm on now, which is a clothing fast or a gear fast, whatever. I kind of say anything that I can adorn my body with, whether it's jewelry or clothes or shoes or anything like that, I'm going to go a year without purchasing anything. The night we decided to do it, we came home to pay the babysitter, and immediately I looked at her shoes, and I had to have them. And I thought, oh, great, this is going to be so much harder than I thought. And worked through that, didn't go do that, obviously. And then a couple other things happened in the beginning that made it tough. But actually now it's been a few months, and believe it or not, there's been a huge sense of freedom that's come with it that I didn't expect. When I consumed, there was so much, it was more complicated. Like, if I was in a down mood, something, it could have been anything. It could have gotten an argument with a friend. It could be raining that day. Whatever it was that, you know, I didn't feel effective as a parent. Something that brought me down, when I would buy, it would be like an endorphin rush. You know, I'd feel good. It would give me confidence. But I was using stuff to bring my mood up, or I just gave it the wrong identity, you know, instead of getting things on a needed basis. I think back in October, I just was like, when is enough enough? When will I ever have enough? You know, I constantly get bombarded with catalogs and clothing stores and, you know, you need a new coat every fall. And who's telling me that I need to buy a coat? Is it like a 22-year-old in New York City telling me I need a new coat this year? You know what it was? I had a loss of control of my life in that area. I did not have control over my spending when it came to that. I was kind of subconsciously just doing stuff, and I wasn't thinking through it. I wasn't thinking, you know, that I wanted to make that choice. I was listening to all the information out there in the world and thinking, oh, like a robot, I need a new coat. And obviously, when I really stopped and listened to what I was saying to myself and what I thought God was calling out in me, it was so much better. I've shared this journey with lots of my friends because I feel like the more people I tell, the more accountable I am. And actually, now I'm probably accountable to like 8,000 people. So I'm afraid I'm going to get busted in Target. But I think what God is doing specifically in me on this personal journey is that he's making me realize that when I have those times that to lean into him. And I think it's an exercise for me over this year that when I have those feelings like, oh, I want to go buy something or just buying stuff to buy it, that I think about him, I lean into him to get me through that moment or that down feeling. And then at the end of this year, I don't think that God necessarily wants me to be out of style and get stuck in the mom jeans and the whole thing. But I think that he, it's setting me up for success down the road. It's setting me up to have a system in place. It's teaching me the freedom. God's showing me freedom in this world of consumption. In the beginning of this journey, I felt consumed to buy. I felt like I needed new things every season. And I think it's our culture. It's constantly, and from television to magazines, we're constantly knowing that we need more and new. And for me, God works on my emotion, and I got angry, and I think God took advantage of that opportunity to just reveal to me in a shameless way, not shameful at all, just open my eyes to see, Susanna, you know, when is enough enough for you?
It's a great line. When is enough enough? We can have stuff, but stuff can't have us. And it just happens the more stuff we get, the more magnetic pull we have for that stuff to have us. It's just dangerous. When is enough enough? There are very smart people that spend a lot of time every day crafting 3,000 messages every day for us to consume that tells us that we don't have enough, to tell us that we don't have much to be thankful for, to tell us that we will be happy as soon as we buy one more thing, that life awaits as soon as there's one more purchase or one more savings deposit, then we'll be happy. And God says, that's just not the way it works. Jesus says, that's not how it works. In the book of Galatians chapter 5, verse 1, says this. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. Freedom, that's what Jesus wants for us. Freedom. Freedom. And whenever you feel in bondage, whenever you feel in slavery, it has nothing to do with God. There is somebody that's trying to steal from you. There's somebody who's trying to kill you. There's somebody who's trying to burden you. There's somebody who's trying to weigh you down. There is a force that's trying to get you and I to believe that we don't have enough and that God is not enough. We just need one more thing, and we're just putting one more chain on us, one more handcuff, one more burden. Jesus says, I've come. I'm excited about you. I want you to be free. Free. You know, when she said, when is enough enough? It just reminded me of a song that I sing regularly and I hum regularly. And I thought it might be helpful for us. And you will not be thankful when you hear my voice, by the way. You will not be grateful for that. But I just thought that this song is one point a prayer, another point it's a declaration to ourself, another point it's sort of an anthem to God of the way that I want to be, and maybe it's the way that you want to be too. God, I want to say that you are enough. In my spiritually sane moments, I realize that you've given me more than I need, let alone enough. And I'm saying thank you. God, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. No more absence. No more. I'm sorry. No more attitude. I know I've said that before, but I'm saying it again. I'm thankful. That's enough. That's enough. That's enough.